Welcome to the S2 Cognition Podcast. S2 is the official cognitive evaluation in sports, from youth to pro, where athletes and coaches build to win.
Welcome to the S2 Cognition Podcast. I'm your host, Harrison Hunter, and today we're joined by the lead decision maker at Elite 11, Brian Stump, and 14-year NFL veteran quarterback Drew Stanton. Brian has worked at Elite 11 since its inception and oversees pretty much every element from scouting to drill work to finals MVP decision. And Drew was an early attender of the Elite 11, went on to play quarterback at Michigan State in the league for 14 years, capping off his final season with a Super Bowl victory with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We dive into the evolution of quarterback evaluation and development. We also highlight the importance of both the physical and the highly desired intangible qualities that form the makeup of quarterbacks, the role decision-making plays in on-field performance, and the excitement and challenges of building innovative on-the-field decision-making drills for quarterback training and development. For those that are new here, welcome. We're excited to have you today. And those that are returning listeners, we always appreciate your support. To help us continue our growth, we ask that you subscribe, rate, and review the show. Thanks again to Brian and Drew for taking the time out of their busy schedule to join us. We hope you enjoy. We got Stack Sports VP of Football Operations, the man behind the entire Elite 11, the esso facto GM of Elite 11, if you will, Brian Stump, and of course, 14-year NFL veteran Drew Stanton, also Super Bowl champion. Can I get a quick, just the quick Super Bowl story before we actually jump in here?
I mean, I tell people all the time I got the ring, but I didn't do anything for it. So, you know, I don't know if I can really tell too much, but that was the COVID year. And it was so interesting, again, to be able to go and be a part of an organization to see, you know, when the playoffs started and the long haul all the way up until the culmination of watching those guys hoist that trophy. It's something that, you know, it's the pinnacle of this sport. And it was just such a unique time in my life and put a stamp, an exclamation point on saying, okay, it's time for me to go step away from this game and move on to greener pastures.
You got that ring, baby. That's what matters. That's what people care about now. Let's start from a high level perspective. Justin, Brian, let's start with you. The sports in general, we've had this almost obsession with the physical characteristics of an athlete, just in general, and we'll tie it down to quarterbacks. But the physical nature of the athlete, specifically in quarterbacks, right? You look at arm talent, right? You go to the combine, guys are still throwing on air. They're throwing 60, 70 yards, and it's hard not to sit there in the crowd saying, wow, look at these guys. They're physically gifted out the wazoo. Their athleticism, explosiveness, all the things that stand out. And you look at the technical side, right? The biomechanical efficiency, how effortlessly they throw the football. It's incredibly impressive. We've kind of moved over the last 5 to 10 years into more of this intangible space because, you know, obviously, if you don't have those other things I just previously mentioned, you've got to have those things to be a successful quarterback at the highest position. But we've had some of this, okay, this quarterback makeup, right? Let's look at the entire picture. We've had this push toward more psychological, right? More of these intangible measurements. And so we think of the psychological, right? Like the grit, determination, how he leads the team, how his team galvanizes around him. Is he a good person? Is he going to help us and reach a common goal? Specifically, I want to talk about the speeded cognition or on-field decision-making. We're a little biased. We think that plays a role in the quarterback makeup as well, is this quick decision-making element. How have some of these intangibles become a part of what you are looking for at Elite 11?
Yeah, it's a great question. And especially now as a parent of an eighth grader and a sixth grader, as they get older and older every year, I'm really able to start equating parenting to how we evaluate and bring quarterbacks through the Elite 11 program. And playing the position, just as life is all about decision-making. So I think when we go through the Elite 11 process and we start with regional camps where we go out and we see, you know, usually between 500 and 600 quarterbacks a year, absolutely all those quarterbacks that come through the regional camps at some level have to have that minimum bar of physical ability and performance at this point on the field to get into that club, right? And then from there is where we really then start to dip into, you know, what can we measure and have data to be able to quantify, you know, where they are at certain levels, and then the intangibles that you mentioned. And so that's why it's really been exciting for us at Elite 11 to partner with you guys at S2, going into year three now of the partnership and really be able to start to lean in. And we're excited to get you guys out to the regionals in 2025 for the first time. And really start to lean in and try to be able to quantify some of those things, because as we go back, and we always want to review our process at Elite 11 and look at guys that have come through. And Drew can speak to this as a quarterback. There's so many more talented players at the position that the general public never heard of because they were very poor decision makers in some way, shape, or form, right? Guys that could throw it through the car wash without getting wet, and guys that did amazing things at the high school level, especially, but even some guys that went through the college level just off of physical ability. And so how we're able to lean in and start to quantify some of these things, and that's really the more time we get to spend with them, you know, the quarterbacks that will eventually get at the finals, we learn exponentially more about those quarterbacks when we get to spend 3 to 4 days with them than we do, you know, through 6 or 7 hours at a regional camp. So how we can continue to work with great groups like you guys. We certainly do spend time on the evaluation process at the Elite 11, but also it's important to remember that the reason this event started was really to help develop these guys that have shown top level ability. So while we do want to do our best on evaluations, and we'll continue to work hard at that, we also want to expose them to the best in class in all these different groups. And so the opportunity again for them to connect with you guys at S2 at the finals, especially, and learn more about how their brain works and things they can do to improve that process, hopefully, and things like that. So it's definitely, you know, one part evaluation, but we always want to lean into the development aspect as well and try to give these guys that have shown this top level ability and potential all the opportunities to lean into different groups that are experts in their fields and help them along the way to get to where they want to go.
I think it's really cool. And you touched on something there that I really want to stay with. The entire focus of basically this podcast is going to be the development of the quarterback and what we're looking at. And I think that's a vital role. I mean, Drew, you attended, one of the early attendees, if you will, this event. I mean, how much different is it? I mean, now you're a coach, you're a parent, you played. The event that you attended, it looks a lot different now.
It does, and rightfully so. They were kind of the new kids on the block when I was in high school back in 2002, and nobody really knew what it meant to be invited to the Elite 11. Obviously, the name of that, and it's grown in magnitude, but it's the gold standard as far as quarterback development is concerned. And that's really what you feel like. Brian and the team that they have there through the Elite 11, when you show up, you feel a part of that family. And so I got a chance to go in high school in 2002, and you get a chance to be around all of these great quarterbacks nationally. You know, Vince Young was in my group, Tyler Palko, Jordan Palmer. I can continue to go down the list, but you know, it was really neat to be able to be a part of this, because then you go out on your own separate ways and you're watching Vince Young go out and play a great game against USC. You're watching all these guys. So it's this fraternity that gets built. Fast forward 4 years, I get a chance to go back and be a counselor and be able to be around those same guys. You know, and guys like Trent Edwards, Tyler Palko, all those guys showed back up. Troy Smith, after, you know, on this Heisman campaign, you get a chance to be around these guys and pick their brain, but also learn and then impart wisdom on the people below you, right? So there's this whole systemic effect that takes place of you saying, okay, well, you know, I got a chance to be around Carson Palmer. You fast forward, you know, I'm a counselor and now I get a chance to do this. And then we become teammates. Right. Jonathan Smith becomes the quarterback or becomes the head coach at Michigan State. I get a chance to go see him. And I was like, you probably don't remember this, but I was a little kid from Farmington Hills, Harrison, and you were a counselor. And he's like, oh my gosh, Rohan Davey. So you start bringing up all these blasts from the past. Right. And Stumpy and I talk, and I was like, I haven't seen Brian in so long, but when you see each other, the true authenticity behind the product they've built is what this position is all about, because it can be very lonely out there at times as a quarterback. And then there's other people that are trying to replicate this. You can't replicate the Elite 11. You can't. You can have other quarterback camps. You can do all this stuff. But the intentionality and then the continuing pressing of the envelope and partnerships like they have with S2 and you guys of saying, okay, you have great ability. But even the greatest talent evaluators that we have at the NFL level, half of them miss, right? So you would think you can watch all the tape you want. You can do all this background knowledge and research. Part of it's, okay, do they fit into the system? How do they look? How are they going to adapt under pressure? And we have all these metrics. I mean, I showed up to the Elite 11. I didn't have a quarterback coach. All the kids from California, like Ben Olsen, Drew Olsen, they're like, oh, this guy's my quarterback coach. And I was like, well, my high school coach is my quarterback coach. What do you mean? Right? Like, this wasn't a thing in the early 2000s. Then you go out there and you compete, but you get exposure to this type of a setting. You know, and the Johnson family did such a good job of that to be able to provide that platform. And it's just grown in magnitude. And now you're kind of fine tuning some of this of saying, okay, well, can they process at a higher level? But I also think the beauty of Lily 11 is its age appropriate application, right? They're not going to ask a younger kid to do some drill or high level thinking that he's not prepared for. And you kind of open your eye. And when you're younger, you don't know what you don't know. And a lot of these guys, even when they get in the NFL, they don't know what they don't know. So the more something like S2 can expose them to that and say, okay, well, these are my areas of deficiency that I can hone in on, but here's my areas of strength too, right? Like, what a valuable tool it is to be able to give these parents and these kids that their ultimate goal is to be able to try to play on Sundays, but you can't play on Sundays until you play on Saturdays, and you can't play on Saturdays until you have a tremendous amount of success on Fridays.
Drew, I'm going to steal that. But something that was palpable, I mean, Brian, to that point, like, I think of Jaden Daniels 2 years ago as a counselor, right? You see these guys come through. I think you guys had Cade, and was it Dylan Gabriel was there this past year at the finals. You see how they interact and they remember and they were there together and how they kind of counsel. I mean, that's the whole goal, is to counsel this younger group of guys that they're going to be playing against on Saturdays and then eventually on Sundays. It's really cool that that atmosphere that you guys have created. But Drew, I do want to stay and pull on that thread just a little bit more. You mentioned something about understanding your player's strengths, and that this is the development aspect of what we're talking about with cognition and speeded cognition. The strengths that the athlete brings from a decision-making standpoint versus some of the areas that you might be inconsistent. What are some of the schemes that might throw inconsistencies your way? What are some of the decisions that you make that aren't going to be as consistent in the game? What is the value to a 13, 14, 15, 18-year-old kid getting evaluated on the evaluation to understand, man, these are some areas I really need to either A, lean into, or B, work on, and a drill concept? The overall development of the quarterback, what role does that play?
Well, I think it's huge. It's just based off of how we process, because it's also dependent on what their coach is asking them to do at that level, right? Is it a straight read progression? Or they're just going one, two, three across the board. First guy open gets the ball, or are they actually trying to read coverage? Are they trying to high low a defender in zone? Are they trying to have some kind of man read pre-snap thing where you can sit there and say, okay, this is where you're going to adapt to what's going on. Now at the high school level, it's more minimized, but when you get to college, right, you're trying to be able to be in a perfect play. And in the NFL, if you're not in a perfect play, then you're going to throw an interception, or you're going to get sacked, or you're going to be able to do all these things. So I think the sooner that they can realize what those strengths are, right? Some of these skill sets are inherent in our mind and our brain and our ability to process and see things in an instance, to be able to recall things, to be able to learn an entirely new language, this new jargon, and go spit it out at a moment's notice, but then also execute, right? So you think about the margin of error just continually decreases over time. And so that means you have to be that much more sharp mentally to be able to recall these things, to be able to do these things, or make in-game adjustments of what's going on. And really, again, the physical traits are there now for these kids. They all have these quarterback coaches. They have the ability. They have great footwork. They understand the release point. They understand where to hold the ball and all these great things. The missing link is, what do you do when you actually have to get onto that field and somebody's going to come hit you? Because it's different in practice, right? We've all seen practice players that are out there, and they can sit there and they can be the best 7-on-7 player you've ever seen in your whole life. And you get them out in the game, you're like, where is this disconnect there? That's the processing issue that we're talking about. That's the stress factors that we're talking about. That's where you see some mechanical flaws creep in of saying, man, this guy's going to bear down on me. I know I've got to redirect my mic point and slide everything over to the left to pick up this pressure. But then I still know that I've got to be able to throw the ball to the right and trust that their guys are going to do their job. So there's so many games within the game that a fan doesn't necessarily really understand, or really even a high school kid, right? At that point, depending on who their coach is, you go to that next level and it's eye-opening, and you better adapt and adapt quickly because of the landscape of the NIL and college free agency and all this stuff. You better be on top of your game, because if you slip at all, you're going to end up transferring 6 different times in 5 years.
Right. And I the simple answer is, it's never as easy as we think it is, especially from the seat that we get to watch it from. It's never that easy or never that simple. Brian, I want to go back to something Drew said about the real point of understanding these things. I mean, that's why you guys are going to have us at the regionals and academies, is can we expose these players earlier to where they are in their decision-making process, and then equip them with tools to, hey, let's work on this, right? You guys have private quarterback coaches. You guys have ways to work on this. I think that was the goal when we first started this partnership.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also in line with the way that the game's going. And Drew just referenced it a little bit. The onus now more than ever is on the quarterback and his support group, you know, primarily his parents or, you know, his family members and things like that, that are along the journey with him. The onus is on them now more than ever to really invest in and take charge and leadership of their own development process. The development aspect is not something that college coaches really have a chance to invest into anymore. Their job security is the next couple of games in front of them. They really don't have the luxury, unless you're at maybe the top 0.1% of college football programs, to recruit a kid and really think that, hey, I've got 3 years to develop this guy before he's going to see the field. Because the reality is, if you don't win your next five or six games, you know, all these guys are on the hot seat. And it's the same in the pros. And Drew can speak to this. They have less and less time now in the offseason to really work with the coaches and develop young players. There's nowhere to go get game reps. There's nowhere to go get live reps. So the onus now more than ever is on the young quarterback to take ownership of and take the impetus to go out and seek the best tools to develop themselves. And so that's why it is great that you guys are in this space now. And there's access to more information than ever and more resources than ever. So it's now how can you sift through the internet and social right. media and find the right tools and the right people to work with. And so I think that's one of the really cool things about S2 is you do get to learn a little bit about how your brain works, you know, where your strengths are and the opportunity to take that knowledge to your next coach. You know, one of the cool things about the Elite 11 finals and those guys that have participated is they can share that information. Say they're going to LSU next year and share that data with their quarterback coach, you know, how the best ways they learn and recall information and things like that. So, you know, they've got to take ownership of this now because unfortunately, for better or worse, the way that college football is now set up, it's going to be very rare that a kid goes somewhere and sits for 3 years and starts his junior and senior year because that's just not the landscape anymore.
I know we're going to sound like get off my lawn guys about, man, the game is just so dead. But it is. I think, and in reference to like a point, I remember Kyle Shanahan, it might have been off season last year, and you guys may remember this, but one of the media members asked, well, hey, what does the quarterback coach do and developing? And it's like, I was enlightened a few years back where it's like quarterback coach, offensive coordinator, and head coach, if they're not the same person or if they're different roles, they're focused on strategy and winning and beating the team that they play on Sunday. The biomechanical efficiency and getting guys in the right, you know, their feet to line up with, I hear Kurt Warner talk about it, I hear quarterback coaches talk about it. That's not happening at the team level. And I think that's eye-opening to someone who doesn't really understand this is, to your point, it's put the onus on the individual, and they have to have these quarterback coaches that work on biomechanical efficiency. They have to have these quarterback coaches that do that because in the regular season, the entire staff is dedicated to how do we beat and win on Sunday from a strategy standpoint. I think if either one of you guys can take your thoughts with that and run, but I think it was eye-opening as someone who didn't spend any time in a building at that level.
Yeah, I think you find the perfect storm of a guy that's played the position, understands mechanics, but then is also making minor tweaks here or there, right? Like a guy that comes to mind, because we can keep it in-house, would be Brian Griese, right? Like you see what they did with the draft of Trey Lance, and then you go out and get Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy had the luxury of sitting and learning and adapting and kind of fine-tuning some of the stuff and soaking it in. And I just think that's a rarity. That is an outlier of a situation. Now, when it happens, you see the comfort level that exists because Brian Griese played in this league for so long, understands that offense, understands so much of the things that we get caught up in as far as arm strength. It's all tied to your feet, right? And that offense is all about your footwork and being able to have your position and all of your angles correctly and all of those other things. And then the ability to process and deliver the ball, as I talked about earlier. When you have a coach that's been there, done that, same thing with Mark Brunell in Detroit, you know, with Jared Goff, and being able to kind of put more of that onus, not only on yourself in the film work that you have to put in, but then on the field on Sundays where you're the last one with the pencil, that's where you're seeing these teams and you're sitting saying, wow, Detroit looks invincible at times. That's because Jared Goff is doing everything to get them in the right play. He's getting them the call out. The same reason why Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or any of these guys, they've seen everything. They understand everything. They've processed the game already in their head before the snap even comes. Then it just becomes the physical component of it. And I remember, I guess I can rewind all the way back now at this point, You asked the Super Bowl story. Well, this is the Super Bowl week, and Tom Brady goes, "Hey, I got Tom House coming down to work on my stuff. This is the last week of the season. Hey, I just want to make sure everything's tight and everything." That's how important mechanics are. And sometimes it works to have a quarterback coach. We had Clyde Christensen there, who's phenomenal with mechanics. He was with Peyton Manning. I was with him in Indianapolis. Fantastic coach. But so much of that effort, like you said, is being put into how can I game plan and strategically break a team down, as opposed to sit there and say, "Well, here's a mechanical flaw. Let's go out and get these reps." Reps are precious. They're limited. They're all these things. But Tom put the onus on himself to be able to have somebody come in and say, "Okay, I've got to make sure I am tight. I want zero regrets when we go out to play this game against Kansas City." And he goes out and plays a flawless type of a performance.
Yeah, it really is unbelievable. But I do want to stay. You mentioned the development aspect of the quarterback decision making, the drills that we're going to run through. And Brian, this is for you, but Drew, please, with your expertise, sprinkle in your thoughts here. But just the two-part question, right? We all want to build more efficient, better, faster decision makers at the quarterback position. That's what we're all in the business of doing. What are you, A, excited about these drills and concepts from a cognitive standpoint? And B, what are some of the challenges that you guys could potentially see with some of these drills?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think that's something we're always looking at with the coaching staff is how do we evolve, right? How do we make it more applicable to today's game? How do we introduce new drills or evolve old drills to be more relevant? I think the thing that we see every year is more and more of the game is played in chaos, and the called play very rarely works out, whether it's a protection breakdown, whether it's a receiver running the wrong route. So how can you quickly react and make the right decision? So that's sometimes introducing, hey, we're going to do this drill with a 5-step drop, and we're going to try to throw the skinny post, and off of that, if it's not open, we got our check done over here. But then you introduce a free rusher component or something like that to where, they've got to react to a new piece of data, I guess, from that standpoint within the middle of the drill. So evolving the old drills to reflect the speed of the game now and how quickly decisions need to be made is certainly one big part of it. But then I think to the point you were talking about earlier, we also have to keep in context, especially more so when we're doing the evaluation component. There's a lot of things that kids can do with their feet and how they respond to pressure that are almost still impossible to reflect in a shorts and t-shirts setting, I guess, is the best way. So we will do some fun stuff at the finals where we could put kids on the big stage, right? And all eyes are on them. And it can be intimidating maybe when you have 19 of your peers looking at you and some of them are, talking a little trash and giving you a little crap and that sort of stuff. But it's nothing compared to, a 290-pound guy running free, and he's going to hit you right in the mouth right after you throw the ball. So there we know that there honestly there's things that we can't replicate in the camp setting, but we do want to continue to evolve with the game and learn more about you guys and the process and what we can gather from the cognitive testing to go back, because it like I said, it all goes back into the decision making and what you do with the ball in your hands in that split second. Can change the course of a football game. It can change the course of your career and your trajectory and how people see you. And so being able to learn more about how kids make these decisions. And then, I think the bigger thing is the best ways to teach them based on how their brain interprets information and how we can have them learn more about that. So them and their parents and their support kids system can work back with their current coach and their next coach and moving forward in their career.
Yeah. And Drew, I think about when, I mean, you took the evaluation, right? You got to see it and now you can retroactively like look back at your career and like, oh man, yeah, that makes sense. It's this and this and this and why I did this in these certain situations. But understanding from this aspect of like, okay, nothing in the game happens in isolation. I love Brian. Kirk Cousins was the first one who brought it to my attention. He's like, hey, there's a play that's called and then there's the play that's actually executed and they're like never the same play. And that really stood out to me and is something that is really shaped how I think about things moving forward. But you're exactly right, Drew. You can get into what's the perfect play? Well, it has to be executed, the one that's executed correctly. And so understanding that why when you take it, it's almost impossible to have the simulation of pressure. But we try to force that speed and accuracy element because, Drew, you don't have all day back there to throw and make a decision. You have a time pressure element with those guys coming at you. But at the same time, you got to be accurate. You can't just go out there and just throw haymakers all over the place and just hope something sticks. And I think that's what's really interesting from our perspective is getting to see, it's really hard to simulate the speed of the game, but can we follow this transfer path of what we know about the brain, take tracking capacity? If we're wanting to have a player broaden his attention across the field to see multiple moving objects, right? So think about anticipation, how a quarterback plays with anticipation to throw to places where defenders aren't. Wait, how did he even see that? How did he even see that window? He was over here. If we understand that the two things you can manipulate are the number of people that you have to track within that space, or you manipulate the space, that's how we drew. We've talked about moving the transfer path, right? If think about basketball, if I'm in a half court setting and it's one-on-one, that's easy. But if I go full court, 5-on-5, that's all of a sudden the hardest place to track. And so how do you filter through the drill starting from that one-on-one to then build and do 7-on-7 and team?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. And going back to what Stumpy was saying, there's three or four plays in every single game that's going to determine the outcome of that game. Whether you make that play and you fit into a tight window, or you leave a little short, or whatever that looks like. I was actually at Elite 11. I think it was Bob Johnson. He was talking. He was saying, okay, well, if you think about a high school kid, the margin of error is probably about 4 feet wide, right, of where you can go. If you're talking about, you get to a college level and it's about the size of a shoebox, right? You get to the NFL and the margin of error is literally inches, whether or not a guy gets a finger on it, he closes here, he does this. So you have the rapid response so quickly. And I think going through that test, to your point, for me, impulse control is so important, because for me, sometimes like you've got to make a decision. Can I fit it in this window? Am I going to cut it loose? And that's a vastly different decision to make in the fourth quarter versus the first quarter. Right. And you start talking about situational football. You start understanding, okay, it's third and long. Am I going to try to check this ball down here and get a field goal? Because I can get points on the board. Do I need to cut it loose and try to get us in a fourth down and manageable? Because now analytics is saying fourth down and whatever it is, I'm going to go. So all of these things play into it, these external pressures. And if you're not prepared for those, it becomes controlled chaos out there. And you're saying, okay, well, I don't know what I'm going to do right now. I'm just out here running plays. And wait a minute, that linebacker went from right here to right there. And now I just dotted him in the chest right between his fours. And I looked like the biggest idiot on national television because I didn't track where he was at. I'm looking at this guy and all the, oh, by the way, this guy's got a free rusher on me and I can hold on to it. I mean, think about the play that Drake made. He roams around, he's scrambling, he does all this stuff at the very end of the game, time has expired. He extends the play and throws, you know, somewhat of a mini Hail Mary up. Goes for a touchdown, everybody's like, that's the greatest play ever, right? But then you look at Geno Smith, he's roaming around trying to do the same thing. Game is on the line. Mitt throws the ball, pick six, and he doesn't know how to play quarterback. So you're looking at these two parallel things, and sometimes we get so wrapped up in the result that we forget to look at the process of how we got there. So if the play ends up good, you're a genius. If the play ends up bad, you're an idiot. And that's really the inherent risk that we take of playing this position, and those of us that played it enjoy that. We thrive on that. But we also understand, and when things go well, we deflect, much like Drake May did. Hey, you know what? We should have been in a game where we just won the game. At the end of the day, we didn't win. Geno Smith deflects a different way. Hey, I'm sorry. I apologize to the city of Seattle, my teammates. I've got to be better. So part of that, the maturity, is also the processing and understanding and the growth that you have, because every time we step out in the field, it's an opportunity to grow and get better.
It's, well, I want to kind of pull this thread just before we get to the last piece of the podcast, last question, the inconsistencies at the quarterback position. Do you think it's for the NFL players, is it more physical or is it decision-making?
I mean, that I think at that point it is decision-making because as I talked about, that margin of error is so small, but it is also physical from the standpoint, if there's a mechanical flaw, if there's a long release, if your footwork is wrong. I mean, everybody looks at Patrick Mahomes and they're like, man, like he's so unorthodox. Well, no, if you look at all of the biomechanical efficiencies that he has at the point that he's releasing the football, it's unbelievable. But that's not stuff that's easily replicated. But his decision-making that he has within that and the ability that he did have to sit down, watch Alex Smith, learn defenses, doing all these things again, the preparation component and then applying it in real time, that's where you see the cognition really taking off and separating these kids, because even when they get to the college level, right, they could be a can't miss product, right? They are the best thing to come out of the quarterback position to get out there. And you're like, man, he just doesn't have it. And everybody's still trying to quantify what it is, right. The ability to process. That's the it factor that everybody's looking for.
Love that answer. Okay. Do you have anything to promote, Brian? Anything to promote? I know we got Academy coming up, regionals, finals for next season. Anything to promote on your end?
No, I mean, we'll just have our 2025 event tour coming up, and we'll be pushing out Academy schedule. We'll start evaluating. I mean, this is really the funnest part of the year, aside from being out at the events, is we call it like the discovery of football season's wrapping up. So really get to start to dive in to everybody's film from the fall and find some new names and things like that. And then get them out for the regional camps and go through that process to get to the finals in the summer. But no promotions. Other than maybe we got some sweet merch on the website, but I'll leave that to the people to do that.
Well, I will say, I mean, this is so I got to stand. It may have been two finals ago. Ryan Russillo was him and I were talking about, you know, your process. I was reading that Athletic article. You really do have an impossible process. You got to scour through and then your initial settings. But man, he's like, I'll tell you what, these guys here do not miss. They are the best at what they do. And so I got good enough for him, good enough for me, man. You guys do such a good job. But that I was reading that that article the other day, and I was laughing. I'm like, you do have an impossible job to scour. Yeah, I mean, it's like, you can't miss.
It's fun. I mean, like, that's the part where you get excited is you're going through an all-state team, and you find some kid in Iowa that's like a 2A guy. And the great thing is you have all this at your fingertips. You just have to go look, and you pull up this huddle, and you most of the time when you watch 90 seconds of a kid's huddle, you can get a feeling either way. And, you know, there's times where you get excited, and you're like, hey, we might have found somebody. And because there's a lot of talented kids out there. You know, the unfortunate part is sometimes they just all have the same forum to display their ability. So trying to be there's never going to be a totally equal playing ground, but trying to be a place where, you know, kids with talent can come out and have a chance to display their abilities to more eyeballs than maybe they might have access to normally is definitely one of the fun parts of the job as it relates to trying to be able to, you know, give kids a chance to expand their horizons and have more options than they might have had otherwise. So.
Now you guys do a phenomenal job. Drew, you just started. Is it a football league? Is it a football team? Like, what is this youth? Dive into that a little bit.
Yeah, it's a youth tackle organization here in Arizona. It's a full-time unpaid job is what it's become of worrying about, as opposed to one kid. I've got 100 kids under my umbrella with some unbelievable support system that we have. And, you know, again, I think youth sports in general is a passion of mine of trying to lighten not only the kids, but the parents of what this looks like, the age appropriateness, as we talked about earlier, but also the level of expectation. There still needs to be a fun component to it. There needs to be a competitive component, especially when you're talking about tackle football, but there's a systematic approach that we have within our organization. We take it very serious. So that's been awesome. And then I'm also trying to get into quarterback scouting for NFL teams. I mean, that's been my biggest drive now, and kind of how I got linked up with you guys was through my agent. And then again, having the ability to stay connected has been great in this industry. And so I called Stumpy, asked him about you guys, and he's like, they're doing some really cool stuff. And so again, you find good people that you want to be associated with. And I want to think outside the box because inside the box has already been done. I want to be able to find those loopholes. I want to be able to look at the kid from Iowa and say, hey, that kid deserves a chance. I want to be able to look at some of these people that you would say, hey, like, okay, he's a bust to the first round pick. Well, why was he a bust? Was it where he was drafted to? Was it his ability? Or can he turn into a Sam Darnold? Can he turn into a Geno Smith where all he needs is the right opportunity? Because that was me. I got drafted in the second round. 2 years later, they drafted Matthew Stafford number one overall, and I knew I was out the door because it's a business. At the end of the day, the NFL is a business. It's about making money and doing all these things. It's also about mitigating risks. So how do you do that? You have to get to know as much as you possibly can about these quarterbacks, and putting them in a position to be successful is what it's all about. And sometimes it's just unlocking a door and opening that avenue for them to be able to be the best version of themselves.
Man, that's great. So we're going to move into the last section of the podcast. Normally do three. I'm going to fire off two and two. You were not prepped about this. Brian, if you weren't running essentially one of the biggest youth sport brands, most important brands in the football space, what job would you be doing?
Based on my last 2 years of doing a little bit of what Drew's doing, I would love to start a youth girls flag football program and be the groundbreaker, trendsetter, getting that off the ground, because coaching my daughter's team the last 2 years is one of the funnest things I've done. And the way that's going with being a high school sport now, and I think it's going to be a college scholarship sport, and it's going to be in the Olympics and all that sort of stuff. It's been a really cool thing to you know, just be a part of those girls getting opportunities to go out and play the sport that we've all had the opportunity to play since we were 4 years old.
It was amazing. We got a chance to be with like the USA team here for flag football for the girls 12 to 18 out in LA a couple months ago. And I'll tell you, they are incredibly impressive. It is really special what some of those players can do. Blew me away. Okay, Drew, this one's for you. I actually have to look at my notes here because there's a lot here. Starter for Michigan State, 2005. Side note, Brian Hoyer got some action as well. Then again in 06, Brian Hoyer steps in 07. Nick Foles got some run there as well in that season. So you've got you, Brian Hoyer, some Nick Foles action, and then it delivers right into Brian Hoyer, Kirk Cousins. I'm like, what a run for Michigan State. I'm looking through the quarterbacks. I'm like, those guys all play on Sundays. That's crazy. If you didn't go to Michigan State, where was it going to be?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I wanted to play football and baseball. And so actually going to the Elite 11 and talking with those guys, Drew Olsen was a guy that ended up going to UCLA. So UCLA was one of the schools that I wanted to go to because that's where you know, they were going to give me an opportunity with Bob Toledo. And then Florida was another one, who Gavin Dickey, who I'm sure Brian hasn't heard that name in a long time, he ended up going to Florida as a quarterback. So those were the three schools that I was looking at that wanted an opportunity to do that. You know, and the other schools that I was looking at, we're saying, hey, we want you to focus on football. And I just wanted to keep my options open. So that was really the case. And if we're going to go like true Elite 11 style, even before I got to Michigan State, Jeff Smoker was also a fellow Elite alum. So we had a nice run of guys go through there, and Connor Cook and whatnot. So we had a good run for a while. Hopefully we can get back to that, because Aiden Childs has a lot of promise.
Yeah, that's awesome. But I was just going through the years. I'm like, are you kidding me? I don't know that I just didn't notice this or what. Incredibly impressive run right there. Brian, in the middle of the night, you get awoken by whatever. What's your go-to midnight snack?
Oh, midnight snack. Wow. I've been, it's not really midnight. I won't eat that late. I'll just try to get back to sleep. But like dessert wise, they got these cookie dough bites now, you know, the Ben and Jerry's ones that are pretty good. You know, you can crush half a bag of those before you even know what's happening while you're watching a show with your wife after the kids go to sleep. So I'll go with the cookie dough.
All right. So a little earlier than midnight, but still the cookie dough bites. Love it. Okay. Drew, last question. When you played, biggest superstition?
I really didn't have many superstitions. I think, you know, as it adapted in the NFL, I just wanted to always feel like I was prepared because I was a backup, right? So like I would just stay in a routine of the same checklist, but it wasn't ever like, oh my gosh, I had to have my like lucky blanket or, you know, like anything like that. Or like, I had to wear the same suit and tie, or, you know, we tried to keep it pretty loose, yeah. Especially when I was with Carson Palmer my last couple of years here in Arizona. And then with Baker Mayfield in Cleveland, like everywhere that I was, it was not really a big superstition as much as just throughout the course of the week, feeling prepared. And again, I was also lucky to be around Sean Hill and Dan Orlovsky that showed me how to prepare as a backup, because there's a whole different mindset in that as well, which maybe that'll be type two of the podcast, episode two of how to prepare as a backup, because that's a whole different mentality.
Yeah, that's well, I mean, you guys only gave me a short window. I could talk to you for hours, but I love and I really appreciate the space that you two work in. How do we enhance the development of youth football players? I love your mission. I love what you guys do, and we're thankful to be a part of a small piece of what you guys do. So, Brian, Drew, appreciate your time today. Love the conversation. Thanks so much, and we'll chat soon, man.
Thanks for listening to the S2 Cognition Podcast. If you like the content we're putting out, please subscribe with that plus sign at the top of your app, leave a review about the episode, and share it with a few friends. You can follow us on Twitter at S2 Cognition and Instagram at S2.Cognition. If you'd like to get in touch with the program or show, please visit our website at S2Cognition.com/podcast. Thanks again for listening to the S2 Cognition Podcast. I'm your host, Harrison Hunter, signing off for now. We will talk to you soon.